Welcome to TFT's radio show. We have an incredible guest with us tonight. Some of you know him as Pete. Others as Peter. Others as Bronx or So Bronx or South Bronx School. I think his mother just called him Damn It or something like that. So what I want to do, ladies and gentlemen, is introduce to you the Bronx teacher. Ladies and gentlemen. Okay, hello, Bronx.
Hey!
Shalom!
Hey, I guess I have my own theme music now.
You do, sir.
Wherever I go.
You do indeed. Let me wish you a big shalom and let you go ahead and take us wherever you're taking us right now.
Okay. Well, I think the first thing we should do is we should bow our heads and cup our hands together and say the prayer before the Torah.
Okay.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, I've got my yod right here.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure you have a nice, large yod.
Oh,
okay.
It's nice.
But do you want to come up here on the bimbo with me and share this with me? Are we ready? You bowing your head? And that's why we remember for the prayer before the Torah.
Okay, well, then let me do the Hamotzi.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I can do that. Hamotzi lechem okay. Min ha'aretz, amen.
Okay.
And
now
then
you
when
want
I,
to find
well,
the, what?
Well, wait, because in summer camp, instead of the Hamotzi, sometimes what we would do is we would shout, rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub, yay, God.
Oh, okay. We did that, too, at my summer camp that I went to, the Young Men's Christians Association summer camp.
Yeah, mine, too.
Yeah. But, you know, if you want to find the Afi Coleman right now, if you can. I have hidden it in a special spot.
Well, I'm eating Homentoshin right now.
Oh, okay. So do we do our Netanyahu, Nainayenu now, or do we have to wait 2 more weeks for that?
I think Dayenu is in a week.
Okay.
Or no, so, no, it's... I know that I'm driving down to L.A. on Shabbat at sundown.
Okay. Uh-oh. Okay. So what... I guess the new version is Net-Net-Yenu.
Is that in honor of BB?
Yeah, BB the nut job.
What a guy.
But yes, but I digress here. I like your opening music. It's very Neil Haley type.
You know what that opening music is? It's called Grateful Dog, spelled D-A-W-G. And it is Jerry Garcia and David Grisman doing a little acoustic. So it fits perfectly because I'm an old deadhead. And, you know, it's nice kind of peaceful music to lull people into a sense of calm before the storm.
Okay. Well, I guess that makes sense. You know, I've never gotten into the Grateful Dead. I just wasn't there. And this is a beautiful segue into my plug that I've been told to do by the powers up in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. That all you boys and girls out there, be sure to run to your record store on May 29th or your iTunes store on May 29th and get the new Rush album, Clock or CD, or I don't even know if it's called CD. I don't see these still around. I don't know, but the Clockwork Angels. And right on the street, there's going to be a suite on there, like, you know, 2112, you know, a nice 20-minute song or something. So I think this is going to be Rush's best work in years. And I'm sure the subsequent tour coming up will be around. So save now, get your tickets early. Right, Rich?
Yeah, and let's not forget to mention the fact that Geddy Lee the lead singer and I think the main writer probably also, and the bass
that's Neil Peart. Right?
Neil writes most of the stuff?
Alex and Getty write the music.
Right, okay. And Getty is a Jew, as you mentioned earlier.
Yes, he is a Jew. And so you know who else is a Jew? Diamond Dave.
That's right. David Lee Roth is definitely a Jew.
Yes.
I think we need to constantly mention the Jews throughout the show tonight.
I think we should. And you know who else is a Jew? Gene Simmons.
Yes, he's an Israeli Jew.
He's an Israeli. He also used to be a teacher here in the Bronx.
Did he?
Yes.
When did he make Reverse Aliyah?
I don't know. I've never was a big Kiss fan.
Yeah, me either. But I'm just wondering if he's been here kind of his whole life, or if he came as like a kid and, you know,
I know he was born in Israel.
Was he in the army in Israel?
Let me look this up right now. I will look this up here on. Because
I'm just kind of curious. Yeah. Oh, hey, wait, Bronxy, we got a caller. Hey,
do
caller.
You have a caller?
We do. Caller, okay. You're on the air right now. Caller.
Hello. Hello. Am I on?
You are. Who are you?
Hey, my name is Peter Gwynn. I'm also known as I'm not your rabbi. I'm Mr. Teachbad. How I'm known to most people.
Oh,
hello, and yeah, I just yes.
Cool. I feel like I'm so honored.
Oh no, totally. It's my pleasure to call in. I've been following your site for a long time too. You're TFT?
I am indeed TFT. And the other guy is Bronx.
Yes. Hello.
All right. Besides all of the education things, I'm a huge Rush fan. And I just recently learned that Geddy Lee was Jewish as well from that documentary.
Yeah, his real name's Gary Weinrib. You can't get more Jewish than that name.
What's his name, really?
His real name is Gary Weinrib.
Nice.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay, you didn't know that? Both, and his parents are both survivors.
Of the Holocaust.
From the Survivor TV show, actually. No, seriously, they're both survivors, and they both met in after the war, where they grouped everybody, the relocation camps or whatever.
Right.
I just saw
a documentary on that. There's some documentary, I think, on Netflix about that whole process, which was not a pretty process.
No, and that's where they met. I think his mother survived Auschwitz, and I forgot about his father. There was a Rush documentary out about 2 years ago where his mother's, like, maybe late 70s, early 80s, and is talking. So, I took Debbie to, you know, the Auschwitz. So, what's it was like? You know, she had that nice Yiddish accent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Teachbad, what do you... Talk to us, Teachbad.
What are you guys doing? Is there a theme?
There is a theme.
Talking about famous Jews?
No. Here's the theme. Let me try to explain it, since it's technically my show, although I don't really care. Bronx and I are both male elementary school teachers. We both happen to be Jewish, so there's that connection. And it's somewhat rare to have male elementary school teachers. And so we just thought it might be interesting for the audience to hear what a couple of male Jewish elementary school teachers sound like when we talk about stuff. That's about the focus of this show.
Okay. Well, I can contribute in a couple of ways.
Sweet.
Not Jewish. However, I am a man, and I did teach elementary school. I taught 6th grade, 4th grade, and 2nd grade. And what I can say about that is, like, the younger they were, the shittier it was for me.
Really?
Yes. It just became more awful. And it went in that order, 6th grade, 4th grade, 2nd grade, and then I moved to high school, and that was... that was much better for me.
Like, tell me why it was shitty with the little ones. Why did it get, what was progressively shittier?
I guess because I'm sort of sarcastic and nasty,
right,
in some ways, and you have to be a little bit older to understand that and take it,
okay,
in the right way. And second graders just didn't get it. And second graders wet their pants. I didn't know what the fuck to do about that.
All right, dude.
So
very
now
honest.
Wait, was this when you first started teaching that you were doing the little ones, like in the first couple of years?
Yeah. It was my first couple of years, and I had no, teacher education training, anything like that. I came in as a sub, and then I came back the next day, and then after 2 weeks, the principal said, you know what, you keep coming back here, and that's kind of all I need, so do you want a job? So
Are you a second career teacher like me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
You know
course.
What, in a way, I could be a second career teacher, too, because, I went back to college when I was 27, and I graduated when I was 31, and after high school, I had a lot of odd jobs, and pretty much from the mid-80s to the early 90s, I worked in the deli.
You're a second career. I would consider all of us second career teachers if we had other jobs, for a decent period of time before we became teachers. I was working...
Yeah,
I was 35 before I became a teacher. 34.
That's about the age I was too. I mean, it could even be considered a third career for me. I mean, it was.
You must be really old.
No, I'm 42.
Jesus, I think I'm a grandpa.
I'm 48 on Monday. I just
turned 49. I'm the grandpa.
Wow,
here. All right, kids.
Happy birthday.
Sit down, kids.
Thank you. But Teach Back brings up a very good point about he didn't know what to do when a second grader wet his pants. And what it does, it comes from experience. And
right.
Now I know what to do when a second grader wets his pants. You know, I send him down
you punch
to the
him, right?
where they have, huh?
You punch him?
You punch him, you
no,
yell
I
at him. You disgrace them.
No, I don't make a big deal about it. I whisper in his ear. I say, go down to the parents' room because they have a lot of extra pants for these situations. And not to make a big. You don't say in the middle of class, "Oh, you wet your pants," or you keep it quiet. And that comes with experience.
Yeah, well, I always had a cupboard full of clothes, so I would just, the kid would usually end up staying put in their chair and kind of looking at you funny. And you'd notice that it's a little damp down there, and you'd quietly kind of walk up, and they knew that you knew, at least in my classroom, and they knew where the cupboard was with the clothes, and I'd just kind of say, come on, let's go take care of it and make nothing of it, just like you said, Bronx.
Yeah, I totally did not have any of that in line, and if I remember right, I think that this kid had asked me probably repeatedly to go to the bathroom, and I had said no because I was at the point where I don't know what I'm doing at all, and nobody is helping me, and so I'm just gonna like try to put a lid on all this shit,
right,
and just like not let anybody do anything.
Play it safe.
Yeah, and so then all of a sudden this little boy pees his pants in my class, and like, it was awful. It was terrible.
All right, we have yet another caller on the line. Area code 412, you're on the air. Who are you?
Yeah, this is Sean Johnson. I want to see what you two Ashkenazi SOBs are talking about.
You mean like Yaffe Coleman? You don't know what Yaffe Coleman is?
With a name like Sean Johnson, it's likely he might not. Bronx.
Yes, with a name like Sean Johnson, you know he's got to be a Gentile.
But
my wife's an Ashkenazi Jew, though, so.
So she's Gentile by injection.
Yes,
sorry.
Indeed. Although,
sorry,
I think I think the Jew thing goes in the other direction, though, right? I mean, at least.
It does.
I have no religion, so I really don't care either way. I think Judaism is much more interesting than what I would have been anyway. So.
And you're right. And it is matriarchal, so your kids are little Jews.
Yes.
You can't even help it.
We have animals
Did you notice the silence from Sean after you said that?
No.
Sean was saying in his head, oh, shit, what am I going to do now?
No, Sean.
Yeah, it's the cause for divorce now.
No, he just admitted that they only have pets for right now, but they're Jewish pets.
They are. I circumcised them myself.
And kibble.
Oh, okay.
Kibble, by the way, is kosher.
I don't think it counts. If you circumcise them yourself, I don't think that counted.
You got to do it again. No, if you hold the instrument prior to the actual circumcision in your mouth like a moil, then it's absolutely, it follows Jewish law. Right, Jill? She's in the chat room.
And
she's a Jew, and she's my friend. She's awesome.
My son's bris, I cried.
Put it in your mouth? Is that for real?
In the old days...
The instrument.
No, I'm kidding. But no, but seriously, in the old days, the moil would indeed place lips on the organ, not the instrument.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. They would kiss it, right? Or, you know,
something freaky.
That sounds Catholic.
Yeah, you know, I think we can just safely say that religious zealotry in any form is just really disturbing.
You want to know something? When he's talking about that, there's a moil here in New York, in Rockland County, that has been doing this and, you know, sucking the blood off the kid's wee-wee. And he has herpes, and he's passed it along.
I heard about that.
Oh, hang on one second. Jill is asking me a question. Jill, we were asking if it's true that certain moils use their lips on the organ. I thought you might have information on that. All right, we'll keep our eyes on the chat room, see if I get an answer. All right, let me bring something up since it's my show and I ought to host it. I have no idea. Here's something. Let's talk about why it is that the public looks at us male elementary school teachers and immediately thinks we're pedophiles and perverts.
Could I take that?
That is a good question.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Sorry
to get a little serious, but Bronx, please, take it away.
You know, I just think that's the way society is, and as a male teacher in elementary, and even in education, okay, you've got, you know, I just read too many dumb things about teachers, you know, saying, you know, double things, especially the high school students, double entendre. There was a guy here in New York City. I know the guy, he was in the Post, New York Post last week, and he's been accused twice of making flirtatious comments. And you know what? It's just better to play it safe than sorry, everyone. You know, never be alone in the classroom with a female student, okay? Never be, you know, I've always, when I taught in my computer room, if I had to have a female student stay behind, even a male student, I always have more than one. I always have them stay with a friend. Keep your door open if you have students in there without the whole class. You know, the girls come up and they want to, even the little ones want to come up and hug you and whatever. Just don't do it. It's just play it safe.
How depressing. How absolutely depressing. I mean, especially for the men that teach in the younger grades, you know, when Teach Bad's second grader peed himself, that kid might have needed a hug, you know? And here you are saying, unfortunately, what is kind of true, that we have to really watch out for that. That is just so depressing.
Well, here, let me ask this then, because I've taught elementary school and high school. This is Teach Bad. Do you think... Like, you seem to make a distinction between boys and girls. Like, do you think that's where it's at? Like, that's a concern? Because when I was teaching fourth grade and second grade, it was all African-American students, and they would they would come up and just want to rub my arm because it's all hairy. They'd never seen a hairy arm before. And there was a lot of, like, hugs. Like, it was just a very affectionate community, and I never thought anything of that, partly because I was new and partly because it was younger kids. But when I was teaching high school, I was very aware of, like, some girls are, like,
right,
like kind of flirting with me, and that was much more weird. And
because it's
that was
hormone laden. The little ones, there's no hormones involved.
Right.
And I think, I mean, Bronx's point about girls, I would say, is absolutely true in high school. But your point, Bad, about little ones, and be it boys or girls, I mean, my little ones were hugging me all the time, and I was hugging them back. And Jill in the chat room says that people, and then she says people who are dumb, don't actually understand why men would want to hang around with children unless those men have salacious motives. And I think that is a common thought process out there.
Really,
it probably is. But you want to play. You know what? You want to plan for the worst and hope for the best. And
right.
I guess I'm not going to, especially here in New York City, with the New York Post leading the way of journalistic integrity. I'm not going to take that chance.
I hear you.
You know. I'll give high fives and all that stuff, and, you know, but I'm just not going to do it. You know, it's like I watched Kindergarten Cop when that little girl doesn't know how to get that things off her overalls, and Arnold goes, "Yeah, I help you," and he's taking the things off. I'm looking, I watch it with my wife, and say, "This guy's going to get written up for that right now."
Hey, Bronx, you're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But you can't take the chance. I'm sorry. That's the way life and things are nowadays.
Hmm. But that's a really big thing to take away, because
yes,
maybe we teach sort of similar populations, and like sometimes that's like a nice hug from a grown up they trust. That's a really like something they really really need. At certain and so, you know, to not be able to do that or feel uncomfortable doing it, or that's just another like arrow in the heart of the teacher.
It is, and look at it. Think of this: nurses and doctors, especially those working in recovery units and critical care units and post-op kind of situations. Nurses are now taught to touch, right? To hold the patient's hand, minor touching, but to offer a touch. And doctors have been encouraged, you know, and this is not a long-standing mm-hmm. thing. This is kind of new as we find out that humans require touch, and touch actually is rehabilitative, so however you say that word. So medically speaking, we know that touch is important for recovery. And here we are talking about how we can't hug little kids when they're hurt or something in school for fear that we men in the schools will be considered perverts or something. Jill also makes another important point in the chat room. She says teachers have been predominantly female historically, and we guys, we have stereotypes to break.
Well, yeah, this is something I got to weigh in on because I've done a lot of work on this issue.
And this is Sean Johnson, ladies and gentlemen.
This is Sean, a.k.a. Chalkface.
Right.
Yeah, so there's four big reasons why overall men don't choose to teach. One, like you pointed out, the fear of scrutiny related to physical contact with kids. Teaching has historically been, as Jill said, a largely feminized profession. It's got low status as a result. And so men have career options that women don't have, even to this day. And so men have the options of certain careers that maybe have higher status or more prestige, and they'll go along those lines more so than teaching. Teaching also has low salary as a result of low status. That's been going on for a long time. you know, men especially have certain career options that might get them paid a little bit more than teaching. And then you have this long-standing set of gender roles. We have a division of labor in society. Working with children, nurturing them, taking care of them is women's work. Teaching is a pink-collar profession. And right now only 1 out of every 10 elementary teachers is a man. The number of men in the profession goes down as the kid gets younger. So it's 1 in 4 overall, about 25% men, pay 12. But then you get down to early childhood, it's only about 2%.
Wow.
And this is a global phenomenon. So this is not just something endemic to the United States. You look at the UNESCO data. So you look at, you know, UNESCO, the United Nations, puts out data on the teaching profession throughout the world. It's dominated by women pretty much in every emerging and industrial economy out there. And so you wonder, okay, so you know, perhaps we've got cultural differences in how we treat men or women. And this starts off when you're an infant. You know, when someone has a kid and you go to their baby shower, oh, it's a girl, all right, let's get every pink shit thing imaginable. Or, you know, it's a boy, let's get him blue. And then somehow yellow has become this gender-neutral color. I don't know how the hell that's happened. But we do pink and blue.
I know how, because it's not blue or pink. That's
stuff. Right. Well, how the hell did yellow become the default? But whatever. And so we start this kind of stuff from the very beginning, and then we wonder why, when kids are coming out of high school or going into college and trying to think of a major, why men wouldn't want to choose teaching. Well, they haven't been babysitting or taking care of little siblings. Women have those experiences. We don't allow men to do that. And so women, teaching is just not seen as a manly thing to do. And a lot of men are called, you know, a faggot, or they're accused of being gay or a child predator if they go into it. And so sometimes it's just not worth it. You know, I've been accused of a lot of stuff. All you do is babysit and finger paint all day. Sometimes it's just not worth the extra scrutiny, and people don't want to put up with
speaking
it.
Speaking of finger painting, didn't our friend Fred Kwanski get nailed for that? By somebody for making $100,000 because he teaches kids to finger paint.
Oh, is
what the hell is that guy's store anyway?
Are you talking about Kyle?
Yeah, Kyle, what the hell is his deal?
I think we all looked him up and found out who he was. He's the lesser James O'Keefe. Remember James O'Keefe, the Breitbart pimp who went to Acorn? This guy has delusions of being James O'Keefe. That's like having delusions of being nobody, right? Because James O'Keefe basically is a nobody and got pewned for that. He went into that senator's office lying, saying he was the phone company or something, and got busted. So this Kyle Olson twit is exactly the same. And I saw a brief interview on Glenn Beck's show. He was a guest on Glenn Beck. And this, you guys all know the book Click, Clack, Moo, don't you?
Oh, yes. I just read that in my daughter's first grade class last week.
Okay, so Click, Clack, Moo is, according to them, subversive union propaganda. Because
it totally is.
And it kind of is, but it's not subversive, because the author isn't being subversive. The author is a union member, and the author's pro-union, and so the book is kind of, you know, pro-union. But these guys are talking about it as if it's subversive, and there's a cabal of subversive leftists out there writing and publishing these books and slipping them in to the classrooms and reading them to the kids. And Glenn Beck and this guy Kyle were saying, yeah, well, you know, I had this book, and I started reading it to my child, and I got about halfway through it, and I went, oh, my God, this is subversive union shit. And I'm thinking to myself, the whole time they're talking, I'm thinking, so you didn't read the book first. You just bought it and then opened it up and started reading it to your kids. Okay, you fucking idiots. The first thing you should do is read the book yourself to make sure it's something you want to read to your children. So they fail at parenting. And then, of course, they go on to claim that it's subversive union propaganda, and they're turning our students into little union propaganda.
Well, you know, you don't even really have to call it subversive. You could just say, I don't believe in collective action.
Right.
I believe people should just take it up the ass and not do anything. That's what I believe.
That's basically.
I mean, it's very much in the line of like Dr. Seuss, like the Lorax or the Sneetches or, you know, any of those kinds of books. It's, you know, it has a very grown up message.
Right.
Don't be a racist or whatever.
The kids, by the way, understand very clearly, because most of these issues, like Don't Be a Racist and those other Dr. Seuss titles, most of those are pretty black and white. They're sort of like black and white issues that have been decided long ago. It's not okay to kill. It's not okay to be a racist asshole. It's not okay to be a dictator, right? All those things are pretty well established. And kids get that stuff. And Click Clack Moo is exactly in the same vein. It's a very clear explanation of living together with assholes who would rather beat you, you know, and so the only way to get what you want is to come together, which is what they're all telling us we should teach, right? Even the right talks about, oh, we need to come together and we're not really racists and we are a big tent, right?
To come together to crush the unions.
Right, so there's value in coming together, but only if we can kill you. I mean, they're fucking insane, those people.
I got a question. Isn't this Tea Party thing, isn't this them getting together, being collectivist, protesting? Why are they not socialists? But if a bunch of teachers get together and walk in a circle with signs, we're socialists.
Yeah, Sean, professor.
Well, that's why, like, they recently, Newt Gingrich trotted out Saul Alinsky. You know, that was the new boogeyman. They had Jeremiah Wright. They had Bill Ayers, who's I've spoken to. He's a very sensible, very interesting guy. And then you get this Saul Alinsky, who wrote Rules for Radicals, and they claim that, you know, he's all about community organizing, and that's where Obama learned his tactics. But then again, you know, people have made comparisons to the Tea Party, that all of Saul Alinsky's community organization tactics were the same thing the Tea Party used.
Right.
It's been very effective.
But I think, the Tea Party is, it seems to be organizing for a fundamentally different thing. They're like organizing in order to stop people from organizing, or.
Right, they're the bad kids from.
I don't know.
They're the
They're like the blonde kids, you know, in those 80s teen movies, like the Nazis, like from Karate Kid.
I'm thinking of the famous book, The Shipwrecked Kids on the Island, and they break Piggy's glasses.
Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, you know, there's the kids that sort of want to come together to make things good, and then there's the kids that just want to kick everybody's ass and take shit. That's the Tea Party.
Fuck that little fat kid.
Right, that's the Tea Party.
That was unfortunate.
The Tea Party are the piggy killers.
But, you know, I have no problem with these people. You know, Tea Parties, you know what, if they want to go and march or whatever and go ahead, all the more power to them. That's their right. And it's our right as teachers, which Olson, you know, is deriding, you know, teachers. I think something in Milwaukee about teachers, you know, doing the Occupy Milwaukee or whatever, he's deriding that. And it's getting ridiculous. And I forgot who posted it today on Facebook, but right now in Georgia, they're trying to pass a law that unions and union members will not be allowed to pick in the front of private residences.
Will not be able to what?
However, if you are a member of a union, or a union will not be allowed to picket in front of a private residence.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay.
What would be the difference between a union and just a group of 15 people who all happen to belong to the same union?
I don't know. But here's the thing: you would be allowed to picket in front of a doctor's private residence if he provides abortions.
See, it's so blatantly.
This is what's going on. It's really going blatant right now. You know, with this, you know, you're a union member and you will not be allowed to fart outside, you know. You're going to have to hold it until you get inside and let it rip. It's just getting ridiculous.
What it seems to me is that the militant right are getting more and more brazen because they hold more and more power. They don't need to be careful about what they say because they've got their governors and they've got their state legislatures. So they're feeling free to let their really intolerant racist freak flags fly, is what it seems to me. And I think, like you said earlier, Bronx, that it's backfiring. I think Anthony Cody mentioned it. It seems now to be backfiring, or as you said, they bit off more than they could chew, these reformer Well, and the Tea Party, the whole thing, the whole Alec right-wing, union-busting, privatization, kill black people, turn this into a lily-white, gated nation, the whole thing seems to be backfiring, doesn't it?
I hope you're right, Chris. I said the same thing to Diane Ravitch when she called into my show about a year and a half ago. And I said, I think the tide is starting to turn. And she said, I hope you're right. And this was a year and a half ago.
Well,
and, you know,
maybe I'm wrong.
No, I hope you're right. I hope Cody's right. I'm just getting sick of it. I'm just getting sick of going to work every day and hearing stupid shit and seeing stupid shit in my school every day. And seeing that, you know what, the teachers aren't to blame. We're the damn waiters. We're the ones who bring out the food. You know, there's people who are cooking the meals and making decisions, and nobody gives a shit.
Right.
If I tell you all the stupid shit I've seen in my 17 years of teaching by administrators, by people in charge,
We definitely don't have time. Who's doing construction right now? Which one of you guys is doing construction on the phone?
I'm sorry, I had to go upstairs to the attic to change out my phone. The other one is dying. I'm done though.
Oh, it's all good. Hey guys, we still have 52 minutes left, and I forgot to pee before the show. So what I'm thinking is we'll take about a 5-minute break right now. I'll play a piece of music. And we can come back and talk.
Is it the Hava Nagila?
No, it's going to be Susan Tedeschi, I think. I'm not exactly sure. I'm looking right now as she's not Jewish. She's not a Jew.
Why are you playing Jew? You can't play something from Sydney.
I didn't bother to upload.
Is Amy Winehouse Jewish?
Yes, sir. She is.
I didn't know it was. I didn't know that.
You know who else is Jewish? Dee Snider from Twisted Sister.
No, he's not.
Yes,
no,
he is.
No, he's not.
I will bet you my left testicle he is Jewish.
Well, I talked to him, and
he's Jewish.
I tried to get him to authorize SOS to use We're Not Gonna Take It, and he said fine. And so, by the way, SOS, if you're listening, you can use that and take it as our theme song. We're not going to take it. He's a Catholic school kid, Bronx.
No, he's not. He's a Jew.
He's a Catholic school kid.
No, I'm looking at I thought he was a Jew.
No. It's because he looks like a Jew and his name is Snyder. But
okay,
he's not.
Maybe his mother was a Jew? No, you're right. I'm looking here and it says his
I know I'm right. I know.
He says his father's
right.
A retired New York state trooper. Now, you know Jews don't become cops and at least state troopers, you know, so.
I have music that is by a Jew. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take a 3-minute and 17-second break, and we are going to be listening to David Lee Roth, not Van Halen, but David Lee Roth. So I'm going to mute everybody right now, so if you try to talk, you'll see that you're muted. And we're going to take 3 minutes, so I'll come back when the song is over because I got to pee. Here we go. David Lee Roth, You Got the Blues, Not Me.
someone I know ain't me. I'm tired of living up to what people expect me to be. You know some people I do, but now ain't that a crying shame? Now wouldn't it be a real drag if we were all the same? And I'm not gonna try to please eyes that just don't see. If I get myself together, well, you'll have a blues like me. Someone I know ain't me. I'm tired of living up to what people expect me to be. You know some people are different now, ain't that a crying shame? Now wouldn't it be a real drag if we were all the same? And I'm not gonna try to please eyes that just don't see. If I get myself together, well, you'll have a blues not me. 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 You'll have a blues.
Yeah. What?
Hey, you're all on the air again. All right. Everybody's back on the air, but let me just tell everyone that was David Lee Roth singing You Got the Blues, Not Me. And if I recall correctly, this is off of his solo album, and I think he gets the writing credit on this. I'm not sure, though. But
when is that from?
Not Crazy from the Heat or something. There was like
a while back.
Yeah, right. Kind of right after he left Van Halen and decided to try to do his own thing, he came out. He did a remake of California Girls, and he did that. Something like that. But I actually think that song's kind of cool.
It's not bad. It's very bluesy.
Yeah, it's totally bluesy, and he's David Lee Roth. I kind of love David Lee Roth, but I'm an L.A. rocker, and they became huge when I was in high school down there, and so I'm kind of, you know.
So you're the one who's in 619, right?
No, I'm the host. I'm your host. I'm in 510.
But who's in area code 619?
There's nobody. That might have been.
That's the number I called.
Oh no! That's just the Blog Talk Radio number.
Oh, okay. I used to live there. Never mind.
Where is 619? San Bernardino. San Diego, right?
San Diego, yeah.
Is that where, Bronx, do you know, is that where Blog Talk Radio's headquarters is?
I have no idea because... They're actually in New York.
What number do your guests call in? What area code?
They call a California number now. It used to be, I used to have a New York number.
Yeah, I guess it's just all weird, so who knows.
Hey, can I bring up something we were just talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so we were kind of talking about, like, is the tide turning, and Diane Ravitch thought it might have been a year and a half ago or whatever. And I'm wondering how the MetLife survey, which you probably all have read or know about,
showed that teacher
satisfaction has plummeted by, I think it was 14 or 16 percentage points in the last year or 2 years. Which brings us back down to a level around 1986 or something like that. But in terms of like how fast it has dropped, it's never dropped that fast, far that fast in 1 or 2 years. And I'm wondering if what's really going to end up turning the tide is just people are going to stop signing up for this job. They're just going to stop. And especially, like, once the economy turns, like, how many teachers do you think are out there just, like, waiting to jump as soon as they can? And then there's a lot of media also about just, like, this is not, like, people are just attacking you left and right. Like, why would you want to do this? So I think this is going to be a harder thing to fill, a harder job to fill in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And maybe they'll have to start treating us better. I don't know.
Hey, Bronx, we can't hear you at all, Bronx.
I'm sorry, Sean. Don't you think this is
Sean, that was Sean's gone. That was Teach Bad.
Oh, the nice, deep, sexy voice. That's Teach Bad. Okay, I'm going to remember that.
He is very sexy sounding. Stop it. Stop it, Sean.
Okay, now he's going to walk around with a 12 head. You know. Anyway, what Teach Bad is saying, this is what they want. They want to turn this job into McDonald's with a high turnover. Okay, with they don't have to worry about pensions. They don't have to worry about paying somebody ever more than $50,000, $55,000 a year. And for the 2 or 3 years you're in the position, you own them because they can't think for themselves. And I'll give you a perfect example. We have a TFA teacher in my school. First year, he has a special ed class. 12 kids, he has one power in there. And the guy's busting his ass, but he's just clueless with a couple of things. And he had, at the beginning of the year, for the first couple of months, a serious, serious, serious behavioral problem in his class. And he tried to be Mr. Liberal, you know, what's your problem? Can I help you? Stuff like that, which doesn't work with these kids in the South Bronx. But there's this one point where this kid tried to run out of the class every day. And I said to him, what you got to do is for a day or at morning, you got to stand between the kid and the door and don't let him out. You got to teach your class from the door, and you got to do it because you've got to establish that you don't take any shit and that you're going to have credibility. And his answer to me is that if I do that, how am I going to differentiate instruction?
he's just full of...
That's not affirming.
Here, Jill in the chat room says it's a special ed class, so most teachers were clueless, no offense. And she's right, you can't throw a newbie into a... Well, you can't throw a newbie in anywhere, I think. I think that's one of the problems. But you can't throw a newbie into a special ed class, especially an inner city one.
But Bronx, you bring up another point, which is sort of what is the goal of people outside of the profession to make the profession? And I think you might be right. Just like all we really want is just people to go in there and put up the word wall and have the do now and just like keep a lid on it to like raise our scores by like 2% or fucking whatever, or just keep it steady. And then if you hate your life after that, then it's fine. You can quit, and we'll just get somebody else to, like, run through this pipeline.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I was just going to say, what it shows is the absolute disdain we as a society have for our children and the people that care for them. If we really cared, then we wouldn't be doing this. But we don't really care. And I think part of the reason we don't care is, you know, I'm just going to come off like a loony, but it's sort of steeped in American capitalist culture where this life here in America is a competition. And school... and things that we as a society have decided to come together to provide for everyone to make us a society, like school, sort of flies in the face of competition in a way. It's a group effort, education is. It's a group effort in the classroom. We preach collaboration and working together, and that's kind of how partnerships and capitalism, you know, it's all kind of tied together. But then again, we don't reward any of it. We reward winners, and we look down our noses at losers. So what we put out there to our children, what they see is the way things are supposed to be when they're in a classroom, and the way things seem to really be once they're a little older and they see the world outside of the classroom. And nobody seems willing to resolve that conflict. We all know the rich have too much and the poor are too poor. We all know it. I mean, we've seen it graphically. We've seen that gap growing. And yet nobody ever says with any amount of seriousness that we need to tackle the problems that create that situation. You know what I mean? We ignore it, and we futz around at the edges, like with teachers.
There's one thing I have to disagree with you. There's nothing wrong with having winners and losers. And when I was playing sports when I was a kid, you know what? If you didn't wind up in first place, you didn't get a trophy. Okay? Now, okay, everybody gets a trophy.
All right, here's the difference.
You know what?
I agree with you. I don't like false rewards either, but I don't like any rewards. But what you're talking about are things that people voluntarily engage in. It's one thing to enter a race knowing there will be a winner or a loser. It's another thing to be born into a society where the color of your skin or the station of your parents,
that's what I'm talking about. I was not comparing it to that.
I was comparing it to that in school,
you got to do better than, you know what, that you got to bust your butt to be better than the next kid. I have no problem with that. I have no problem installing that in my son.
I have a problem doing that as a teacher, but I guess I have less of a problem doing that with my son. How do you like that for
hypocrisy? I have no problem telling a student that you are not working to your potential.
That I say.
And that you can work, if you work harder and put more of an effort, you're going to do much better.
But that's measuring them against themselves. I'm okay with that.
They don't respond to being measured against themselves either. So I think... Just to be generous, the whole reform movement is sort of, if it wanted to do one thing, it's probably to create some kind of an environment whereby low-income, unmotivated, unprepared kids are provided with some sort of a structure to do something. So we get the, like, you have to have a do now, like a fun, engaging thing right at the beginning of class, because everybody needs to be told what to do all the time, every single fucking second of the day.
Right.
And so, like, how do you square that with any kind of real learning and real, like, sort of creativity of a teacher?
You don't.
I know you don't.
So, every time we here's I think what I'm getting at, because it's the three of us and it was the four of us talking, and we're all on the same page, and we all understand sort of the damage being done by
who left?
By reforms. But what?
Who left? There's only three of us left now.
Sean, well, yeah, Sean bugged out a while ago.
He checked out during David Lee Roth.
Yeah,
he was
supposed to have been writing something instead of being on the radio with us anyway.
Oh, so you see, this is what we have to do. The little ADD then there, you know.
Yeah, I am the place for you ADD types late at night, I guess, to call in and.
Yes.
So what was I saying? That, you know, trying to square you if the problems of poverty show up in school. It's not that the school creates the poverty. We know this. We informed educators know this. Since we know this, anytime any one of us says anything positive about a charter school, we are aiding and abetting the enemy. Now, I hate to say that because, you know, I suppose I do come off as totally anti-charter, and I guess I am. But then again, I know there's some little teacher-led charters out there that are doing, you know, exactly what I wish I could do and what you wish you could do in the classroom, and I'm sure they're great. So I'm not, you know, it's not the teachers in them, and it's not the individual charters themselves, and it's, I'm just saying that the movement we know is resegregating and damaging, and the Kips and the Aspires and the big ones do this paternalistic stuff. So when we pay them any lip service at all, we're sort of complicit in saying that we can ignore poverty. And my contention is that nothing will change. Our Pisas and Napes, the gap, none of that's ever going to change unless we deal with the disparity in this country. And that's why I'm never going to let up on it, and that's why I'm never going to say anything positive about the charter movement, because if there is anything positive, it's a fluke. You know what I mean? Am I just
I sort of do, but, like, that, I mean, that really, like, cuts to the bone for me, because, like, I live in Northeast Washington, D.C., and my first teaching job, where I taught these elementary school kids, was three blocks away from the house I'm standing in right now. And I was the only white person in that building for 2 years. And those kids were crazy. And there was no, I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old, and I was not ever, ever going to send my kids to those schools. Not because of the teachers. It was the best boss I ever had was the principal. But my kids were not going there.
Right, because of the kids.
So they're at a charter school that I'm really, a public charter school that I'm really happy with. And so, like,
well,
I feel like a hypocrite because I'm on board with the general sentiment of supporting public education, but my kids weren't fucking going to that school.
Well, you are a hypocrite just like I am, because, like I said earlier, you know, I would never say, you know, you got to my students, you know, you got to beat this kid or we got to beat this school. But I very well have said that to my son. You know, you need to get A's. And you know, my kid, there's no way he's going to be below anybody else in any of his classes.
Okay, well, let me ask you guys this, because I'm seriously considering this, that I really don't want my son in public. He's going to be in sixth grade next year. I don't want him in public education anymore.
Right. Well,
I want to send him to a private school because I don't see anything. I just see it between now when he graduates high school, there's going to be no. It's everything's going to be geared to some test measuring his teacher, and
right.
If the teacher's going to worry about.
I agree. I can understand. We're all hypocrites for wanting the best for our kids, and that's the fight. Jill says that I said, quote, teacher-led charters are doing what we all wish we could be doing. And then she says, if I were doing that and doing it well, would that also be a fluke? And I guess the answer to me teaching in a charter or having a well-run charter that does well, yeah, that would be a fluke.
There's a couple of teachers in my school. We sit together and say, look, why don't we just start a charter? Because we're all the smart ones in the school. And it's nothing against the other teachers. It's because we all know we're all smarter than the administration.
Yeah, but here's the problem. You're never going to, in any school, and it's probably true for Teach Bad, I'm sure it's true for Tracy, who's in the chat room, there's a group of teachers in every school who are the, I don't know, smart ones. And sure, they could open up a charter and probably do well because they have some extra special gifts that are going to allow them to do more. There's 3-point-something million teachers. The percentage of those that are like that, that are the elite or that are the special super rock star teachers that can get kids to do anything, there just aren't enough of them. So we're never, ever, ever going to be able to create a system where we get these super rock star teachers, which is why Michelle Rhee is so full of shit.
I'm not even saying.
I'm not finished. I'm not finished.
Oh, I'm
so,
sorry.
So because of that reality, because the great teacher is a myth in the aggregate, what we need, and because of the reason that we want our kids out of public schools, partly made explicit by Dave's comments, you know, those kids are just insane and he doesn't want his kids anywhere near them. We need to help. We need to help those kids that we don't want to put our kids with. We need to make them better kids. Why are they so in such shitty circumstances? Because they've been living in generational poverty for generation after generation after generation, because we in the society, you know, still haven't figured out how to deal with our disparity. We're still giving tax breaks to rich people. So I really, that's why I keep saying poverty, 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 poverty. And everybody says, well, you know, we're not going to be able to do anything. And I keep saying, fine. We're not going to be able to do anything. Fine. But what you're doing is not going to help. So whatever, you know?
No, yeah, no, the whole right. no excuses rhetoric is just an attempt to say that, well, none of this matters if you have a good lesson plan or
right, and whatever. We know it, and we know that's bullshit, and no one will listen to us. So that's why I said in the SOS chat tonight that we have to be subversive. If the parents won't listen, if the politicians won't listen, if the public won't listen, you've got 20 or 30 kids in your classroom, and you can hand the big old test to them, and you can tell them the fucking truth. You can say, this test does not measure what it claims it measures. There is data out there that shows this. This test is not intended to measure you. It's intended to measure me, your teacher. So you don't have to worry about this test. This test is something stupid that grown-ups have decided to do, and it's all about money. And that is true. And I got some feedback. Yeah. Anthony Cody and Sabrina are going, oh, yeah, I can't, you know, you got to be careful.
No,
even
you,
Brian,
you know what?
Even
you're
Brian
right.
Khalid.
But you know
but
what?
God damn it,
in
that's
New York
the
City,
truth.
In New York City, you'll wind up on the front page of the Post, and you'll be sent to the rubber room or whatever's left of it.
Right.
That will happen. I
yeah.
guarantee you.
Yeah, that needs to happen. Until that happens, nothing's going to happen. Okay?
What we need is a martyr.
We need more than a martyr. We need 10 martyrs in every school. We need enough teachers. I mean, we need a general strike is what we need.
But and that won't solve the underlying problem, which is
poverty.
It has poverty.
To come from the parents. It has to come from the parents. That's when they start.
Here's the thing. Look at the statistics. When you ask parents about, and it holds true for Congress. You guys have heard this before. I don't know if the listeners
yeah.
have. Parents like their school that their kid is at. Parents think slightly less
yeah.
of the surrounding schools. Parents think even less about the state schools. They think even less about schools nationally. Every parent actually likes their school and likes their kid's teacher. So when your kid's teacher walks out on strike with 2 million other teachers nationwide and we give the reason, the parents are going to be with us. I remember as a little kid, my mom dragging me to go stand on the picket line with my teachers. Parents are with us. Parents have
yeah.
to be with us because they obviously trust their kids with us for 7 hours a day.
You know what happened, and we have no balls. The UFC's lost its balls.
You know, I think I have less faith in parents than you
yeah.
do.
I might be overstating.
Yeah, because I mean that's like I have two little kids and I make them do their homework, and when they get a note sent home from school that, like, you know, he was farting in class really loud or whatever, like, you gotta stop it, you know? So I fix things, and I address things, and I make them do their homework, and I make them practice piano. And the survey that you are referring to, which I have seen also, like, that's the people who respond, right?
Okay,
I mean,
that is true.
There's this whole universe of parents around here who don't give a fuck about their kids,
and
or
they're
their
the
school,
ones that I'm,
or
and
their
they're
neighborhood.
The ones that they're the ones that I contend are, for the most part, struggling with generational poverty.
Right. But you know what? Teach Bad brings up a very good point, because with the homework, when my son was in kindergarten, I made it. I said to my wife, as soon as he gets home, he does his homework. She looked at me, but he's in kindergarten. Why do we have to do that? I said, because right now, when he's 5 years old in kindergarten, we get it ingrained in his head that
the habit.
It's time to habit.
Agreed.
The homework. My son, a month ago, got in trouble twice in a week. And you know what? In school, which was very rare for him, and I did not give him, like, oh, well, it's very rare, I'm not going to do anything. I took the cell phone away from him for the first time for 1 week, and then 4 days later, I had to take it away for another week. So I got that cell phone over his head. You know?
Yeah.
We raise you the cell phone. You can make him do anything you want him to do. Okay?
I mean, we all sound very similar in that we are instilling good study habits and good citizenship and taking responsibility.
Because I have rotten study habits. I cut my senior year in high school.
But it's a total mismatch, you know, what we are expected to do and to compensate for. And you can't even name like resources that you could give me that could completely transform this child to have a completely different orientation towards work and study and respect and like all of that. It gets to be just completely overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so, in that respect, it's hard to set goals.
Agreed.
Like how do you change this? I really don't know.
I remember sitting in teacher evaluate, with my principal during an evaluation, thinking about setting goals like that. And you know, of course, the goals that you're asked to set in one of these evaluative meetings are, you're going to learn more about something having to do with pedagogy or ZPD or BICS or CALP or one of those whatever. And there you are sitting with your principal who's going down the list of academia that she wants you to improve upon, and you're thinking, you know, how you're going to get Gerard to wear the belt you've given him because he keeps getting skinnier and skinnier because he doesn't eat. And, you know, how this kid who came to school with a black eye again, you know, how you're ever going to get him to have the chance to read anything of those books that you gave him because he keeps getting beat up by everybody at home. I mean, there's such a disconnect between what we actually deal with and what is mandated schools deal with by policy. And that's what I'm saying. We know the fucking difference. We know the reality. We teachers on the ground know the reality. The right loves to talk about how they, if they're president, they won't make a decision about war until they talk to the generals on the ground. We are the fucking generals on the ground. And nobody wants to talk to us. And that is shooting yourself in the foot.
But, you know, it's like I have to deal with, I don't know, with you're in Washington, D.C., right?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, I don't know what the gang situation is where you work. I mean, we're there in the South Bronx, right there in the projects. We have them to deal with the Bloods, the Crips, the Nietes, the Latin Kings. And when you're in fifth grade and you've been held over a couple of times and now you're 13 or 14 in fifth grade, and you have to, and you have this, I mean, you know, it's tough. I mean, Whitney Tilsons don't realize the lure of the gang life. And it's difficult.
Do you think I was going to ask you, Bronx, do you think Whitney doesn't understand the lure, or do you think that Whitney believes that these young men, for the most part, are just making a bad decision, and if they simply would just make a better decision, you know, he's putting the blame on them as opposed to, you know, the lure of survival that often lures these kids into gangs? I mean, it really is survival. It's not, they don't have much of a choice.
I understand it's survival, and I also understand, you know what?
Does Whitney understand this?
No, he doesn't, but, you know, I also believe, you know, this is part of me that really does understand what Whitney's talking about, that, you know what,
you can. I pulled myself up by my bootstraps, and you can do it. It can be done. Okay,
right.
But you have to want to do it yourself for yourself.
Right.
Before you
so,
can do it.
And is that, do you believe that's true? Do you agree with that?
With that you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps? Yes.
Yeah.
But you have to want to do it.
Well, what if,
okay,
you
don't... I didn't do it because, you know, my father was getting on my case, you know, and I didn't do it for him, and I didn't do it for anybody else. I only did it for me when I decided that it's, you know, I've had enough. And it's not going to be because of some great teacher, okay?
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Okay, but it's not, okay, it's not going to be because of some great teacher. It's going to be because of me.
Here's with all the things
you know what?
You're saying.
Let me tell you something, Rick. I'm going to say something. I had a great Little League coach, Frank DeRosa, when I was in fifth grade. Okay.
Oh, Frank.
He had an influence on me. Okay.
Yeah. It's possible.
Okay. I had camp counselors who had a great influence on me.
Right.
I had some teachers who were a great influence on me, but it wasn't what made them great was in algebra in ninth grade, I had Mr. Tina doing Three Stooges imitations up there.
And what was great for you might not have been great for another kid, right?
You're right.
So all I totally hear you, and I'm basically agreeing with you. What I'm saying,
no, Whitney's foolish. He's a fucking idiot, asshole, cocksucker, motherfucker.
Could somebody
right.
just give me 10 words about who's Whitney? Who's Whitney?
I just described him.
Whitney.
Well,
Tilson
yeah, cocksucker or whatever. But what
Whitney
position
Tilson,
does he hold?
He's a hedge fund guy. He's one of the defer mucky mucks. And he,
oh, like Whitney.
Yeah, Whitney Tilson.
Oh, wow. Okay, I thought you were talking about some local New York.
No. This is Whitney Tilson of Democrats for Education Reform.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. And what I'm saying is that, Whitney is one of those guys who says you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And then Bronx, you just said you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps, but it's got to be within you. And I agree, but what Whitney is saying is that if it's not within you, then that's a fault of yours that you have. And what I'm saying is, and I think it's more what you're saying, Bronx, but you're just not saying it completely, is that there are kids and neighborhoods and families who have been subjected to such abject poverty and generational poverty and so on, that lifting themselves up by their bootstraps is much different than you, lower middle class or middle class Jew, lifting yourself up. You know, these kids didn't have anybody. They didn't even go to camp, right? Their camp counselors were the older teenagers on the street corner who had already joined up. So I'm always very careful about saying, you know, how one, yes, it is only within oneself to pull oneself up. But there are circumstances that we as a society sort of create and maintain that factionalize groups. And certain groups simply don't have the same base from which to pull themselves up from.
Yeah, and you know what they're doing now?
Can't hear you, dude. Can't hear you.
What they're doing, and this is what's happening. So say the deformers method works, okay? Like Whitney's and everything. All these kids need is a great education, and that's how we're going to end poverty. Well, you get that great education, college is becoming cost prohibitive now. So where's the money to send these kids to really good colleges? But once they graduate college, where are the jobs? But so, you know, the way it's turning out is, you know, unless you're on that upper echelon, you ain't making no shitload of money anymore.
Well, and before that, if you've got, I mean, here we are a bunch of men who have taught little kids. I think I'm the only one that taught kindergarten, and I did it for 6 years.
God bless you. God bless you. If you can do that for 6 years.
And I loved it, and I loved every minute of it, Teach Bad. Doesn't bother me. But, I'm special that way. Maybe I'm insane that way. It's not a. It doesn't make me better. It makes me stranger. So.
Oh,
but,
boy, Ben.
But I can tell you, when Mike and I taught in an inner city district, and there were kids from the hills who were like our kids, who started kindergarten and they knew all their letters and the letter sounds and the colors and lots of things. And then there were the other kids, the kids of generational poverty, who often sat with a blank stare, had incredibly long attention spans for a kid who's 4 or 5 years old. Really, really disturbing stuff. And there's just not a chance in hell that these two distinct types of kids in my classroom are going to end up in the same place. There's just no way. And that's going to carry through with those kids who are suffering the most all the way through their career. So if we want to help use education to lift people out of poverty, what we have to do is first provide these children with brains that are ready for an education, because if we don't do that and we focus just on providing education but not providing the receptacles, not making sure we have ready receptacles for it, what are we doing? And that's, again, my whole thing. Poverty is the key. If we ignore it, everything else is just, you know, water over some bridge. It doesn't do anything. It does absolutely nothing. Right? You
feel me? Aren't we supposed to be the bridge out of poverty, right? Like, we're three smart guys teaching kids, and we, like, that's supposed to be what gets one out of poverty, right? Is getting a solid education and graduating from high school, and, you know, at least graduating from high school.
How do we do that with damaged kids?
I mean, I don't know. Well, here's the, I mean, something that struck me when you were talking. So I've taught elementary school and high school. And in elementary school, I sort of get that, like, you are, as a person who are, you know, 9 years old, you're not really responsible for anything.
Right.
So I'm gonna lay it out for you, and I'm gonna call your parents, and I'm gonna visit your home, and I'm gonna do all this stuff. And then when I was teaching 11th and 12th graders, it was like, you didn't do your homework? Well, fuck you. And, like, at a certain point, this is you just deciding to be a dickhead and not do your work. This is you just deciding to go to sleep right now. So, like, I'm kind of wondering, what's the age when teachers should be allowed to expect more? You know what I mean?
Well, I totally hear you, and that makes biological sense. Since we as society are not providing the conditions for kids to grow up in a situation where they learn these things young, and that's where you learn these things. That's why Bronx said to his wife that their kindergartner was going to come home and do his homework the first day of kindergarten. And that's why you make your kid do his piano lessons, and that's why we all do these things with our kids. The kids that don't have that done are the kids I'm talking about, and one of the reasons they don't have that done is because they're living in abject poverty, and whatever that means, and it could mean all kinds of things. It can mean a parent working many, many jobs so they're not present. It can mean the worst, where you've got just idiots as parents and idiots raising everybody. Drugs, you know, all the horrible things that can happen, just irresponsible fools and all that stuff. We got to tackle them and deal with it when they're young. And you help families the most when you help them raise their young kids well. And one of the ways you help them do that is you provide the medical care they need, and you provide jobs, decent jobs for them, and you provide good schools. And what we've seen in the last 30 years, since Reagan pretty much, is, you know, this gap sort of widened between rich and poor, and the reduction in services to poor people. We've made it worse and worse and worse and worse. And so by the time these totally neglected kids get to high school, to the, you know, at the age when they are basically responsible for themselves, save for their executive function issues that we need to always remember to keep in mind. You know, they're fucked up. They're fucked. They're lost. We fucked another generation, is how I look at that. Yeah, you should expect them to do their homework. They're not going to fucking do their homework. Fuck you. You know? Mm-hmm. And they're kind of right. What has society done for fuck society? Look at my life, they must say. And look at the treatment we get. And look at, we just shot Trayvon Martin, and the fucker that shot him is walking around with his gun. We won't even take his gun away, you know, pending an investigation. It's an insane society we live in. And here we are yelling at teachers, saying that we can educate kids out of poverty. Bullshit. You can educate the Sudanese out of poverty. You can educate Somalia out of poverty. You're going to have to give them billions of dollars for infrastructure, but they lack that kind of education. These kids, you know, most of them can sort of read. They're street smart. They're aware. They're media savvy. They're not uneducated. That's not their problem. They're quote-unquote uneducated. And they've got no reason to bother with it because it means nothing to them, especially as we continue to water down everything and test the fuck out of them, and they know the tests are bullshit. I mean,
they have every reason to bother with it. I mean, I don't know how many nights I come home and just, like, bang my head on the wall and think, like, if 50% of the kids would give me, like, 50% effort, 50% of the time, like, we could be just miles ahead of where we are now. Right. You know, it's, like, give me something. Give me, just come. Just come and come and stay awake and see what happens.
Yeah, I hear you. It's the most frustrating. It's got to be the most frustrating thing in the world.
Yeah, but you know what? It will also help that, you know, we get support from the administration.
Speak up.
It would help so much if we get support from the administration. I know teachers who are being harassed for not having, you know, their papers stacked in the right order or stuff, some petty little bullshit like this.
Yeah.
And if you're going after a teacher and harassing a teacher, well, isn't that going to affect the teacher? And then in turn, if the teacher's affected, if the teacher's all nervous, isn't that going to affect the students?
Of course. And that's what's happening.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's happening. And for a guy in high school, like Teach Bad, imagine, I don't know, but I assume if you had more freedom to use, you know, whatever it is you want to use to reach kids, because teaching is a very personal thing and we all do it differently. If you had a little more freedom and support of that freedom, you might just reach more of these kids, even if we do nothing on the poverty side. But you're probably constrained somewhat by curriculum and procedure. Is that at all true?
And you know what?
Teach Bad?
No, well, I mean, just to clarify, I was fired last year. For the blog that I write.
Oh.
But prior to that, like, yes, I mean, we were told, like, on Monday you have to do this, on Tuesday you have to do this, you have to do the New American Lecture, on Thursday you have to do a Socratic Seminar. So, yeah, it was very prescribed, and because teaching is such a personal, organic thing, like, I think you really have to let teachers play to their own strengths.
Right.
Like, if somebody is a great storyteller, then fuck it, let them lecture.
Yes.
More, because they're telling a great story and the kids are engaged.
Exactly.
So yeah, so that was completely shut down in my school. There was just no discretion to do anything.
That
it demoralizes teachers. And the kids can feel it, and then the teachers quit, and then the next year they have a bunch of new teachers who also are going to quit.
No, just a quick, Bronx, quick piece of radio business for everybody listening. We're going to go off air in about 4 minutes, but we'll keep recording for another half hour if we choose to, so if you call in, you'll be able to keep listening, but you got to do it in the next 4 minutes. Bronx, go ahead. Sorry.
And this is a point I want to bring up, and we haven't even touched on it. It's class size. When you have 32 kids in a class in the inner city, okay, it doesn't cut it, okay? Because, and this is my...
What grade?
I'm talking, at least, I can only speak from what I see, elementary school.
32 in okay. elementary?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Okay, and that's in fourth and fifth grade. Okay, in the lower grades, we're capped at 28. And this here's what my theory is. A lot of these kids, and I don't know if it's so much poverty, but look, you're living in the inner city. You're living there in the South Bronx. Okay, it is so much stuff. Their senses are overwhelmed. There's so much overwhelming stuff. The traffic, the noise, the subway, this, that. Everything. And what I think happened to a lot of these kids is they're not, I don't think they become ADD, but I think they're ADD symptomatic, and they show symptoms of ADD.
Interesting. They're overstimulated.
They're just overstimulated from where they live, you know? I would get overstimulated. I'm ADD. If I was, I would get overstimulated. I get overstimulated when I go into Manhattan. My wife, when I first met her, okay, she lived in Greenwich Village, and it was just, compared to the suburbs, it was so, the pace was so much faster.
Right.
And the thing is, these kids are in third class.
Bronx, can't hear you.
Okay, what happens is these kids are in such crowded classes, they get overstimulated. You cut that class size in half, 15, 14 kids. And that kid who is the big troublemaker, who can't focus, who acts up, he's going to go to the other side, and he's going to become more, not docile, but more.
You're kind of talking about safety in numbers, right? You get a big class, and the goofballs can goof off a little bit more and not get noticed.
I'm not talking safety in numbers. They just act out because they're so overstimulated in a class of 32 kids.
Right.
Okay? But when you cut that class size in half, and you have like 15 kids, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the worst behaved kids are wonderful one-on-one, aren't they?
Right. Absolutely. No, you make a very important point.
And you cut that class size in half, things are going to change. I really believe they're going to change. And
I hope so. Yeah, but they're going to change by hiring more newbies, and so what you're... So what you're going to end up having is, you know, you're still going to have this newbie teaching force, and the veterans are going to get the boot if we continue to end LIFO protections and union protection. Institutional memory is going to go away, and, you know, we're going to have to rebuild.
I know, but look, you're going to get new – look, here's the thing. You're going to get new teachers no matter what, okay? If you're – okay? I have no problems – look, I would never want my son to have a first-year teacher, but if he's going to have a first-year teacher, I want that first-year teacher to have gone the traditional route, 4 years of undergraduate, you know, student teaching, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Okay, I don't want my son's first-year teacher to be somebody who took 50 hours of training in August.
Right, I totally agree, but that's what we're getting.
Okay, but you know... If Whitney Tilson ever gets needs a cop, he's not going to want a cop who's had 50 hours of training.
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
I know.
You know Whitney Tilson's not going to invest his money with somebody who's only had 50 hours of experience.
Well,
wait
a second.
Stealing money from other people.
Wait a second. Actually, those guys are funding Michelle Rhee. Remember, she only had... All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. We're going to go off air in 10 seconds, but if you call in right now, in the next 4 seconds, you'll be able to hear the rest. But we're going to keep talking, and here we are. We're still talking.
Why don't you offer the people who call in now a prize? I thought you were going to do that.
Oh, well, it's too late. We're off the air now, but I don't have any prize. Well, I could have offered them a prize, I guess.
You could, like, win a date with you or something like that.
I have prizes that you could do next time.
All right. Well, then you'll call in again, and the three of us can co-host another ridiculous show of just nonsense, which I think has been fabulously informative and productive, to be honest.
I agree. This has been a great conversation. My wife has just given me the evil eye, but we were gonna watch an episode of Breaking Bad. but then I heard my computer click on it. And I was like, "Oh man, it's the show! I gotta go."
No, well, hey, you know what? So. Who is the parent in your family? You know, it's time you stand up for your wife.
I did. I'm still talking to the Jews.
Yeah, look at that. Okay. I was just gonna say, if I see your number vanish off my screen for no reason, I'll totally understand. So. We gotta get these kids while they're young. So since we're not gonna deal with poverty, here's my brilliant idea, and I brought it up on another show, I think the Mike Butts show. And here's my idea: we've got a huge need for high quality early childhood education. We don't provide it now. We pay a minimum wage for it, and it's just not high quality. What we also have in this country are, I'll bet you, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's got to be millions of retired teachers, right? And a lot of these retired teachers often do part-time stuff in their old district. They sub. You know, they're not ready to be done with kids. I say that we federally fund high-quality early childhood education, and we staff them with credentialed teachers. Now, I don't mean every employee in one of these centers is a credentialed teacher, but, you know, you need one or two for every, you know, 15 kids or something, just basically like you would in a classroom. But they'll provide the kinds of stuff that I watched my mother provide to my son. You know, this grandmotherly, grandfatherly kind of love, but with a credentialed teacher with 30 years under their belt of dealing with little kids. I think it's a great idea.
So, like,
it's a great idea too.
What's that, like, senior corps or something, but like for Head Start?
Yeah.
AARP.
Sure, whatever organization wants to gather the old folks and give me their applications or whatever. But I say if you retired in good standing in your district and you were a primary, you know, like a K-3 teacher, that you're given basically automatic rights to the job. You know, all you got to do is apply. Bam, you're in. And if there's 10 people applying for the job, then you make it some seniority thing just to piss off the right for who gets it. But seriously, these people not only bring everything they have from their teacher life, and but they also bring a retirement income, right? These people are not hurting for money. They're stable, happy, bored. They'll buy things for the school. They'll bring their own camera and not care if it gets ruined. They won't be concerned with trying to live a life of a minimum wage worker.
Right, and the Jewish teachers will bring kishka for the boys and girls.
Exactly, and I'll make latkes.
I have a wonderful latke recipe. You know, does a Gentile know what we're talking about, though?
I don't know. Do you know
that's
latkes?
Is that the little pancakes?
Potato pancakes, yes, sir.
You know what,
Not latke from Taxi, right?
Same word.
Not latke from Taxi.
You know what
kishka is?
Say that word again.
Kishka.
No, I don't know that one.
It's a bunch of grains and vegetables all ground together and put in, I think, what is it, lamb's intestines?
It's really, yeah.
Sounds like haggis.
Yeah, it's now more like tapas because I think they put it in pastry now.
Oh.
That's better for most people, probably.
Yeah, I hope so.
And you put some brown gravy on it.
here's another thing we need to do for these kids now that we're getting all Jewy, because I'm starting to think back of to my life as a child, being lucky enough to go to Jewish summer resident camp, which, by the way, is where I learned to do everything. I'm talking, hey, you name it, I learned it at camp, pretty much.
So did I.
Yeah, and it was all pretty much bad. All the bad stuff. One of the best places ever. In fact, I was just looking at a Facebook, an old friend, some old camp friends, and the old director, who now looks like just an old man. It's very dating. But I remember when I went in to apply for my first junior counselor job as a counselor, and I was interviewing with the director who had been my counselor years before, because I was a lifer at this camp, right? And we kind of get through the interview, and I was not an easy camper. And he said to me, kind of after the interview, which was mostly just a joke because we knew each other so well, he said, all right, look, I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm going to hire you, but only because the worst campers make the best counselors.
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely true. I was a fantastic counselor and went on to become, you know, a unit head and then program director, and then I ended up directing the place. And I ended up directing a couple other camps, so he was absolutely right. He knew it before I did. And it also is why I think, not to toot my own horn, but I was a fucking awesome teacher. And I say that by the smiles on my kids' faces, not the scores on their tests, right? I had kids who couldn't wait to come to school every day because, for me, I wanted to make it a lot more like summer camp. So another idea I have is to require new teachers to be summer camp counselors. I know, it's ridiculous, but you see where I'm going with all this?
Yeah, well, no, my big idea is that Teach for America should provide not classroom teachers, but teacher's assistants. Like, you come and be a teacher's assistant and see what's going on for a couple of years, then you decide if you want to be a teacher.
Yes.
And we can work something out after that, but...
I agree with that.
Because so much of a teacher's life is spent on just tedium.
Right.
Right, just tedium that could be handled perhaps by somebody else. Like one Teach for America person could be the assistant for five teachers.
I've thought about that thing
with
so many times.
Grading shit, making a couple of phone calls, making copies, whatever.
Of all the professions in the world where that professional needs a secretary, it's a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And what does a school get? An entire school gets one secretary. And that really,
you know,
that secretary is pretty much just for the principal, right? It's just so insane what we think we can do on these piddly budgets we give schools.
Hey, guys, you know what? I am going on an all-day-long hike tomorrow with my daughter's first grade class. And I'm going to get to bed because it's 11:30.
My son's going to see a Holocaust survivor tomorrow.
Wow, big things for you guys tomorrow.
That's different. We're going to a waterfall.
Okay.
Both contain a certain spiritual importance.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to say goodnight too, Rich, because it's late here on the East Coast.
All right, well then, gentlemen, let me just say, Teach Bad, how awesome of you to call in. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Please
and
do it again.
Likewise.
Finally talk to you too, Teach Bad.
All right, and I'm glad that Sean piped in for a while as well.
Yeah, well, he's got a foul mouth like the rest of us.
All right, well, thank you for putting this together.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Teach Bad. I want to tell Richard.
No, I just wanted to say thank you for putting this together. It's a great idea, and I'll let me know what I can do to get the word out and build it up.
You're in the loop now, sir.
All right.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Okay, good night. You know, my here's my solution to schools.
No more administrators.
I love it.
No more administrators.
I wrote a piece like that.
Yeah, and it's not because I have issues with authority, as my wife likes to say.
But you do.
Okay. No, I don't have issues with authority. I have issues with stupid authority.
Right, well, it's a type of issue with authority. Look, I have a huge issue with authority. Huge.
No, hey, look, I have no problem with authority. If you're not stupid, I got no problem with you. If you're stupid, okay?
I hear
then,
you.
Okay, you want to hear an example very quickly before I kiss you goodnight?
Sure, sweetie.
Okay. Yesterday, during our extended day, I'm in the library. I answer the phone.
Wait,
library.
Time out. Tell listeners exactly what your job is.
Okay, what my job is, I'm a for the two people who are listening right now. Okay, my job is I'm the dean in my school.
Okay.
Okay? And I was reminded that I don't teach, so I have to take shit.
Exactly. Okay, good.
Okay.
Go on.
But anyway, I answer the phone. I'm in the library. Library, this is Mrs. Zucker. And it was one of our new assistant principal. And he said, why did you answer the phone saying library? I said, well, because I'm in the library, it would be kind of silly to say, like, this is the science room if I'm not in the science room. So that's why I said library. And he said, well, Mr. Zucker, the way you should answer the phone is, good afternoon. This is Mr. Zucker. You at the library. So people will know who you are. And I said, I'm one of four male teachers in this entire school. I have a quite distinctive voice. I think people will figure out it's me.
This is internal phone call kind of thing, so it's only...
Yes. Yes.
And how long have you been at this school?
I've been at this school like almost 10 years.
Classic. It's just classic nonsense. You know, were you told this before, or is this the first time?
This is the first time.
Of course, and of course you're wrong. You're wrong for having done it wrong, even though you've never been told how to do it right.
You're right, because if somebody calls my office, I pick up the phone, Zucker. Okay, you know me, but you see, I figure since I'm in the library, if I say Zucker, oh, I must have dialed it wrong. So
exactly.
I said library.
Exactly. They would have hung up if you had said, this is Zucker, and they would have redialed, and you would have said Zucker again, and they would have been funny.
Yeah, so with all this shit going on in my school, this is what he wants.
The heart one. Unbelievable.
Okay, now you see why I have problems with stupid authority?
Sure. I got plenty of stories too. There, it's
okay.
Ridiculous. But I'm gonna let you go, right? You gotta go?
Okay. I wanna go. I love to do this again.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for doing
this,
Bronx.
Okay, let me try put a plug in.
Please.
To my blog. My blog is shopdownschool.com. Believe it or not, it's one of the top blogs in the New York City area for education. If you look at Alexa, it's like the top two or three.
I know.
Okay. Yeah. I'm on Twitter at SoBronxSchool. My email is SoBronxSchool@gmail.com. And for all you boys and girls, the new Rush CD, whatever it's called nowadays, Chopper Angels is doing your iTunes store and your traditional music store May 29th.
All right, and on that note, Bronx.
You know, you figured they would give me some free tickets for the show.
You would think so.
You
all right, my friend.
Okay, thank you very much, Rich. Good night, Bubba.
Good night, I'm going to play you out.
Okay. Good night.
All right, that's enough of that. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so that was the crazy... Two Jewish male teachers talk about shit show. Turned out to be quite a show, I think. We had Teach Bad, who I had never talked to before. We've tweeted, obviously, a bunch of times, but that was my first time ever talking to him. I like that guy. Good guy, funny guy, smart guy. Always great when Sean calls because it provides just a little bit of, you know, heft, weight. right? Because he's a professor. He's an education professor. So when he calls in, we all get to feel like, you know, we know what we're talking about. Bronx, of course, just my pal. And I think I'm just going to let you in on how Bronx and I are related. We're not. If it weren't for Bronx, let me see. How do I do this? However long ago it was now, a year and a half, 2 years, I don't know. I should look it up. I was invited onto Bronx's radio show on Blog Talk Radio. I really didn't know. I was not going crazy with all my social media, my Facebook pages, you know, education, Miss Education Nation, sorry, and It's the Poverty Stupid and my frustrated teacher stuff. I hadn't really started to go too crazy, I don't think, yet. But I had been blogging and so on, and he invited me on his show. And I went on a show, and it was a great time. And then I got invited on another one, and I think I called in on one where Whitney Tilson was a guest, or maybe that was on one of the Total Tutors radio shows, because he then called me and started asking me to come on shows, and there were a few shows called The Great Education Debates. And Larry Sand was on, and I was on, and Bronx was on, and Jason, the public school guy, was on. The Total Tutor hasn't called me in a long time. He told me he was my booking agent, but I haven't heard from him ever since he told me that. So if it weren't for Bronx, there would be no TFT Radio. So I owe all of my radio-ness to Pete Zucker, a.k.a. Bronx Teacher. Bronx has been a great colleague for a long, long time, and today's show was just a chance for the two of us to talk. So that was really the whole point of this. It was just nonsense. But it turned out to be interesting, and I think some interesting points came up, and I think some of those points deserve further scrutiny. Maybe not the crazy ideas at the end, even though those are great ideas and we should do them. But, you know, my point about poverty, I really challenge anybody to tell me how they plan on raising these stifled, impoverished kids up out of their stifled, impoverished worlds by paternal-type pedagogies like the KIPPs and the Aspires. It's just, it ain't going to happen. More and more evidence is coming out that not only does it not work, but it's damaging, and these charters have damaged many kids by kicking them out and being so hard on them and just punitive. It's just really terrible. Whether or not their hearts are in the right place, you know, like I said, yeah, maybe there's a few out there, but the big ones, nah. Their heart's in the money. So that's what I think. So yeah, poverty, we got to deal with it. The two best ways to start dealing with it are universal health care, period, the end. Health care for everybody, public financed health care. Walk into a hospital, get treated, period, the end. How do we pay for it? Yep, the rich. We tax the rich more, a lot more. Sorry. They'll still be rich. You don't have to worry about them, and they really don't have to worry very much. Especially the billionaires. Think about it. A guy like Bill Gates, let's say he has $50 billion. 50. $50 billion. Let's say we take half of it. Have you figured it out yet? Yeah, he still has $25 billion. So I think we can all relax. These guys won't go broke. They won't stop buying you know, luxury cars or whatever it is you want them to buy to keep whatever business in business. So universal health care funded by a more progressive tax structure. And the other thing is high quality early childhood education. And my crazy idea about staffing it with retired teachers, that's totally possible, totally doable. And if that's not, you don't want to do that, hire current credentialed teachers. Yeah, it's a little expensive. What's more expensive, though? The school to prison pipeline? Yeah, I don't think so. Do we want to be known as a country who cares for its kids, or do we want to be known as what we're currently known as, the fourth highest child poverty rate in the industrialized world? It's disgusting. So, on that note, I'm going to play us out, because I have all these songs. And this song, you might be surprised, I don't know if you will be or not, but I happen to love this song. And the weird part, or the interesting part about this song, is that Eddie Van Halen does the guitar solo on it, but it is not at all really a rock and roll song. It's not a Van Halen song. In fact, it's not a song you might think I would be into, but that's because you have no idea who I really am. And who I really am is the guy that is into the opening song that I played, Grateful Dog, by Jerry Garcia and Dave Grisman, acoustic. Also, that cool David Lee Roth tune I played during the pee break. That's just a rocker, blues, you know, with David Lee Roth singing. And then there's this song that I'm going to play for you now. I think you probably know it, even. It was pretty big. But I love the song, and part of it is I love who's saying it and what they're saying. It's just good. It's a good song. So when the song is over, the show will be over. So if you don't want to listen to the song, you can just stop. But if you do want to listen to the song, and I think you should, and yeah, you should turn it up, here we go.
Prejudice. Wrote a song about it? Like to hear it? Here it goes.
Free your mind.
Well, I lied because I'm still here. And that's because while I was listening to this song, I realized that the Trayvon Martin thing, it struck me as I was listening to the song, and I suppose that's because part of the song, can't change my color, as she says. so it just got me thinking about racism, just about how fucked up we are. I said in another show, one of my music shows, I think that my mind does weird things, and I make weird connections. Not weird, actually. That's not true, and that's part of the point here. Let me defend the connection, because it's not weird. It's a connection, and we all make connections, and oftentimes we make a connection, and we feel bad about that connection, or we feel that we've made an inappropriate connection. But the connection happened. Okay, it happened. And that when you explain something that people might not think of how the connection happened in your own mind, but they should, or they should give you the leeway. And often the right gets mad at the left because the left gives the right absolutely no leeway when they make statements that are absolutely racist. But I suppose we wouldn't give them leeway if they made one that seemed racist but wasn't. You know, we're quick to jump. Why am I saying all this? Because, okay, so we listened to the Funky Divas just sing Free Your Mind, and it made me think of Trayvon Martin. So those are a black woman group. Those four women were just incredible, actually. I loved En Vogue. I thought they were just, I don't know, they were awesome. And that's the song I like most of all. Four strong, powerful black women were on my mind. The horror of Trayvon Martin was on my mind, which is a racially motivated killing, without a doubt, that is now basically being sanctioned by us as a society because we seem to have not demanded that this Zimmerman guy be held to account at all. We won't even take his gun away for a little bit. Or, I don't know, we won't. It freaks me out. The whole thing freaks me out. And so that got me to think of the song Volunteered Slavery. Why? Because of the word slavery, let's be honest. That was the connection, and that's the connection that if I just came out and blurted out, you'd probably go, oh. But, you know, you understand. It makes sense, right, that it would cross my mind. And the reason it crossed my mind is because I have a limited number of songs here in my database of songs that I can upload to Blog Talk Radio. That's one of the good ones, and it's one of the few that popped into my mind that I knew related to the show in any way at all. And the only way it does is that it's not really about slavery so much, our horror of American slavery or any other human bondage. It's volunteered slavery in I think in the sense that we are slaves to certain things in this life that we choose to be slaves to, that I think maybe we shouldn't be slaves to. We're slaves to money, aren't we? We're slaves to consumption. We're sort of slaves to celebrity. Am I being a slave to celebrity right now? Doing a radio show and doing things like that? You know, I suppose, a little bit. It's a little self-indulgent. I temper that in my mind by saying I'm doing good. And I suppose I am, right, on the whole, at least if you agree with me. I'm trying to spread the word and do good, but this is definitely self-indulgent, and there's lots of things we do in this life that seem self-indulgent, and they're often maybe at the expense of others. I don't think a little guy like me is necessarily doing much at the expense of anybody, but in the aggregate, that seems to be happening. So, the first song by the Funky Divas led me to this song, and it is on this song that I swear to you, I will close out the show unless something else comes to mind. This is 5.5 minutes of Derek Trucks and the Derek Trucks Band. I've played this before on another show. It is downloadable on that show somewhere. You can find it at my blog. No, not at my blog. You can find it at the Facebook page or at the actual Blog Talk Radio page, I think. Or at the TFT Radio Facebook page. I think it might be getting confusing at this point. This one is called Volunteered Slavery. Derek Trucks is an awesome slide guitarist. He is currently one of the guitarists in the Allman Brothers. So here we go. This may be the end of the show. Okay, so I guess I'm still here, huh? All right. The vision in my head, there near the end, when Derek just starts to go fucking crazy, is some backwoods shack, juke joint, and the roof is literally being raised off of the place, and people are just hands in the air, bouncing up and down. Just I don't know, that's the image that comes to my head whenever I listen to that. Funny, I guess. So yeah, I'm still here because I'm looking through. I got a couple of other songs I could play in my 19 minutes that I have allotted to me. and so I'm thinking I might play something. This is kind of a quickie. It's only 3 minutes 47 seconds. But let me just do a quick recap of the show. Since we're into music now, the Jew elementary school teacher part ended a long time ago, but there was one song, because there was a break during that show, and that one song was by the Jew, David Lee Roth, called You Got the Blues, Not Me. There, I just tried to sing it a little for you. And then I played the En Vogue, the Funky Divas, Free Your Mind. And then I played, is that right in that order? Is that all? And then I just played what I just played, Volunteered Slavery by the Derek Trucks Band, live somewhere. I think that's it. Yeah. So now I'm going to play another one by the Jew, David Lee Roth. This one's called Easy Street.
Down fast.
If I'm not mistaken, Edgar Winter produced that, and that might have been him playing the saxophone, and I think, that's so very 80s, and I think that that was Steve Vai on guitar, and I think that Steve Vai is kind of the guy, I think he was like Joe Satriani's guitar teacher or something, but that Eddie Van Halen finger tapping on the fretboard kind of stuff, and that super fast stuff was kind of Steve Vai. He was the guy that started all that nonsense. So yeah, and that's not, I think that's some old song, like some old, you know, I want to say, well, I'm going to say Gene Krupa, but he's a drummer. who am I thinking of? Damn it. Can't think of it. The guy that sings King Louie in Jungle Book. I'm the king of the swing. Louie Prima. That might be like a Louie Prima tune, Easy Street. All right, so, you know, I have so much good music that I want to share. That one, by the way, is sort of one of those highly produced 80s tunes, and there's a whole bunch of detail in it. If you download the actual version, go buy it somewhere for 99 cents, it's kind of deep and rich. There's a lot of woodblock and cowbell, and it's well-produced, good stuff, you know, Steely Dan quality production values. Maybe that's why I kind of like it. I don't love it. I just like it. So I'm looking. I could play you Dear Prudence, the Jerry Garcia band, but it's too long. Never mind. Can't play that one. Could play I could play you a Buddy Rich drum solo, but that'll sound awful, I'm sure. So I won't play that. I could play you, you know what I'm going to play you? I'm going to play you a long Derek Trucks. This one's called Joyful Noise, and it is kind of a joyful noise, and I think that's some religious thing. I wouldn't know, but if it's joyful, then I'm all for it. I don't care what it is, and it does. It's a joyful-sounding song. I think you'll like it, and then the show will actually be over. I may have a few seconds to say goodbye. So here we go. Joyful Noise, Derek Trucks Band again. Thank you. Call that self-indulgent or putting on a show, one of the two. So there you go, that's today's show. Thanks to Bronx so much for calling in and being my guest tonight. Thanks to Mr. Teachbad and at the Chalk Face, Mr. Professor Sean Johnson. Thanks to Jill for being in the chat room, and Tracy and guests, and thanks for listening. I'm out.